list. She's got the list.
Okay, you know, you're going to have to let us know if someone is speaking too fast. Of course, everyone wants to get everything they can in 3 minutes. That's the challenge. So, I mean, if you are not hearing somebody, then you've got to say, speak up. Okay.
Good.
Okay.
I was getting her list back there.
Right.
This means that this is the substitute that you call.
Okay. Is this
Steve Carter?
No.
Okay, so we need to.
Okay. Is Steve Carter here?
Speaking.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Well, not speaking yet, but okay. Don't start the clock.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
And just one other thing before you start. I noticed that, for clarification, the yellow light comes on when you have 1 minute to go. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Steve Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. The Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance and the wine industry in general strive to work cooperatively with our governmental and community partners. But these efforts can be thwarted by excessive regulation that requires monitoring for concerns that have not been identified, are not stakeholder-driven, they could jeopardize proprietary information, create redundancy amongst jurisdictions, or result in negative economic consequences. Your board quantified the objectives for the next 5 years during the May and July workshops of 2010 to focus on surface water nitrates and organophosphates. Secondary sediment and repairing issues should be addressed later. Staff's proposal continues to take on too much without the necessary tools or ability to make a difference in improving water quality. Only the constituents identified should be addressed in this order: nitrates, chlorpyrifos, and diazinon. The entire list of 303D impaired water bodies should not be the reference point. Some impairments are due to other pollutants where ag is neither the identified nor sole contributor. We object to measurements and monitoring of criteria that are not a subject of this order. Monitoring and reporting needs to remain proprietary and on-farm. We encourage and continue to encourage voluntary-based incentive-driven programs. We appreciate staff including the SIP certification program as a Tier 1 criteria and the ability of other programs to be recognized. We recommend that the California Sustainable Wine Alliance Code of Sustainable Practices be included as another qualifying program. We acknowledge staff added language that allows reporting of depth to groundwater if construction of the well has been equipped to provide such information. However, we continue to object to groundwater level monitoring as part of this order. Dischargers who do not cause tailwater, as in the case of vineyards, should not be subject to receiving water monitoring. We also ask that items 35 and 36 be struck from the order, which requires new measures for erosion control and stormwater runoff that are infeasible, were not previously disclosed, or may conflict and overlap with efforts of the local governments, RCDs, and the NRCS programs. Staff's changes create redundancy in regulation and overlap of local jurisdiction control and authority. This redundancy and duplication of regulatory authority is counter to the efforts of Governor Brown to reduce government spending and waste in a time of financial crisis for the state. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Good morning. Tim Burrell, B as in boy, O-R-E-L. With Nunes Vegetables in Salinas, and I'd like to talk to you about the use of nitrogen balance ratios. When the topic came up in March at the Watsonville meeting, Chairman Young, I'd like to quote you. You said you don't have a problem with the target in the order, and I'm here today to say that for me, the target is the problem. As you know, after 3 years into this order, it automatically kicks to a 1.0 balance ratio based on harvest removal rates. What this sets up is an unsustainable deficit situation. We grow our food on plants that require more nitrogen than we harvest to eat. We have to be able to grow the whole plant to grow a crop. So I've looked into this. I work with Dr. Tim Hartz from UC Davis. He's the leading authority on nitrogen and cool season vegetables on the coast. And I asked him if he's aware of any research into harvest ratios for nitrogen usage, and he said it would be agronomically impractical to research. That's exactly what he stated. I've concluded there's not much sound science with respect to this part of the order, and I think we'd be better off meeting in the middle and accepting what the crop uptake is and try to achieve a 1.0 ratio on crop uptake as it starts and leave the order there. And then we can wait for the science to back it up and arrive at solutions. I don't think we have the solutions from the science side yet to deal with this, and the order needs to allow for workable solutions. I'll pose it another way in a question. How in the draft order is a grower allowed to seek a solution where he demonstrates that he can achieve water quality goals for water leaving his operation and thus be able to fertilize at any rate other than the 1.0 harvest removal rate? What I urge you to do is set the nitrogen balance ratio on crop uptake at a 1.0 level and also include a pathway which solutions to the problem can be found so that growers can seek solutions and demonstrate the ability to continue farming while showing that they're doing beneficial practices in their operation to water quality. Just like you can take a flea and say it's an indicator of an ecosystem, why couldn't a grower take a simple soil sample as an example of the system on his farm and how it relates to the nitrogen leaving his operation? Some simple solution that we can include in there to allow growers the chance to do the extra work in the first 3 years and let the science come along with us, and then we can find a workable solution where water quality is protected and farms can go on operating profitably. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Lisa, could you make just a note on what that speaker said so we can, at the end, you guys can get back to us with a comment? Okay. All right. Next speaker. Do I need to call him or her? Okay. What do we have, Roger? Chris Bunn, Crown Packing Company. Yeah, Andy Caldwell, Colab. Bob Campbell, Lompoc Grower. Bill Carruthers from Salinas.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Young and board members and staff. My name is Chris Bunn, B-U-N-N. I'm from Salinas, California, part of a fifth-generation farming family located in the lower reaches of the Salinas Valley. We have holdings there with the Japanese families, some Japanese families, a partnership of over 80 years. I want to speak to the ag alternative proposal for the 2011 ag waiver. First, farmers have collaborated over the past 5 years on not only mandatory farm plans, but have used BMPs and made some of the most extensive testing and monitoring for water quality in the history of any agricultural area. Your observations will show you what has occurred beyond mandates and laws. In the past 10-plus years, the innovations of drip irrigation, laser leveling, minimum tillage, and all kinds of soil testing have contributed to major quality water quality improvements. Secondly, the Farm Bureau's Grower Shippers Associations and other ag organizations here, as you have seen, know their members and have the best resources to mobilize and implement the best water quality plan for this nation. I was fortunate enough to work with some of the first water quality groups before the ag waiver. I saw the kind of commitment and organization skills these farmers and ranchers have. You've observed their passion in a lot of your meetings. Lastly, government has a tendency, as you've heard many times, to solve problems with one solution that fits all. As in previous testimonies, you have heard and seen how agriculture is such a very complex science and art. To emphasize this point, I quote a pastor I once had that said, "Farmers do 5% of the work and God does the rest." We have so little control of our environment and must learn more on how to work with it and take care of it. Government has the power to enforce, as a servant, you all, to us, the people, the ag community, you have that responsibility. But I think if you allow us to take the responsibility as an ag community to prove through reasonable science as this gentleman just spoke about, and methodology that our precious water resources can be protected for future generations if you give us the chance to do that. I think your board has already heard much testimony to ag's expertise and hands-on experience. And that's a really an important point, hands-on experience. People that have farmed for generations here. Please support the ag alternative proposal and let the people truly govern. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Caldwell?
Caldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L. I'm Andy Caldwell, representing the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo Counties. We do believe that the rule before you, it represents a Class 1 impact both to wildlife habitat, because in essence you're going to be cutting off the only water supply it has throughout much of the year, and agriculture by the loss of land, but secondly the impacts of creating habitat by their produce, which means they won't be able to sell that produce. But it's a Class 1 impact with a twist, because by definition a Class 1 impact is significant and unavoidable. But what we are trying to beg your attention today is that the impacts are avoidable, because the agricultural community is willing to achieve and pursue the same goals before you, and that is obviously clean water, viable habitats, and a healthy environment. The best way to get to those goals is through cooperation. You've got major organizations representing most all of the major growers on the Central Coast saying they're willing to cooperate to achieve the goals set out by the law and the order. But these rules have to be based on reason, science, and best available control technologies. And they do have to take into consideration the economy. One of the most ignorant things I heard last time is, Chairman Young, you asked this question about, well, is it going to be some places where they just won't be able to grow strawberries or vegetables or use nitrates? And staff said, yes, they can grow something else. Well, that speaks of an ignorance that land values determine what can be grown. Why is there very little agriculture left in coastal California? It's because of the cost of land. You can only do high-value crops in that region, or the land gets converted to other uses, which is in itself a Class 1 impact to ag. We ask you to take a different approach. We're asking you to garner cooperation, which has been demonstrated over the last 5 years, and to check what the background levels are. Do some pilot projects with cooperating landowners. Focus on the areas that have severe contamination. Focus on that first. Create the pilot projects. Get landowner involvement. Get grant monies. Have demonstrations that you can clean this up. You know, this problem didn't happen overnight, and it's not going to be solved overnight. We're asking you, as folks that represent the public and represent the regulated community and represent municipalities and everything else, to say we'll work with you. You meet us. We're going to agree on what the goals are. We're going to have a reasonable time frame. We're going to see what the technology, the science, and the economy allows, and we're going to go for it. This doesn't have to be a command and control approach, and it certainly doesn't have to be taskmasters versus public servants helping the public all the way around and across the board. And so we would just beg you to work with them versus against them. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Bob Campbell?
Good morning. My name is Bob Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L. I am a third-generation farmer rancher in Santa Barbara County. I have a grandson who is currently enrolled in Cal Poly Ag Crop Science Program, and we are hoping that we will still be a profitable family business when he graduates so he can get involved. I attended my first regional water quality control board meeting in March of 2011 in Watsonville, California. While I appreciate the many good questions by the board members at that meeting, I was disappointed in your staff's presentation and their ability to answer those questions. It was very clear to me that in many cases your staff presented less than accurate information and was either unable or unwilling to answer simple questions. For one example, when a board member asked your staff about their proposal with vegetative buffer zones being in conflict with food safety regulatory agencies, their answer was that the only conflict would be between the Water Quality Control Board and the industry's end users. We all know that is simply not true, and that there would be a conflict between government agencies because of food safety regulations. While I don't know whether staff was ill-prepared or unwilling to answer that and many other questions correctly, in any event, was inexcusable. As I see it, you have two proposals before you. The first proposal presented by your staff does little more than set up the agricultural industry up for failure, as it is based on inaccurate information and unattainable goals within the time frame set. On the other hand, you have a proposal from the ag industry that allows the growers to be involved in a process that does address the water quality issues that we are all facing, but with obtainable goals and practical solutions in a reasonable time frame with oversight by your board. Several years ago, with the outbreak of E. coli, the ag industry was faced with food safety concerns like never before. And as you probably know, the ag industry proved itself willing and able by taking the lead in making the necessary changes in food safety standards, and we continue to do that today. And we can do it with this issue and these challenges if we're given the chance. As stated by one of the board members at the last meeting, reaching the water quality standards set by your board will not be reached overnight, but will require some time and effort from all of us. Setting agriculture up for failure with unattainable goals is not the answer. I urge you to please consider seriously the proposal that the ag industry has presented to you so that we can all work together to reach what we all want to do, and that's have good quality water. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay. Is Bill Carruthers here? Mr. Carruthers. Okay, don't see him. Mr. Fred Chamberlain. Ann Coates. And then Jim Cochran.
Good morning. My name is Fred Chamberlain, C-H-A-M-B-E-R-L-I-N. I live and ranch in Los Olivos, California. I think you have before you a decision to make as to whether you follow a science-based regime to solve the problem you set out to solve, or follow an arbitrary rule-based regime put forward by staff. And that's really the choice that you board members have to make. If you will follow science and work with the farmers, you will be able to solve the problem. If you don't, it won't be solved. If you follow your board's recommendation, which is not based on science, your staff recommendation, this will end up through years of litigation, and eventually, if it's not based on science, it won't happen. I would suggest then that you follow a science-based approach and that you work on the areas where the problems are. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Ann Coates? Okay. Jim Cochran? Jim Cochran. Okay. Kevin Collins? Kevin Collins. All right. David Costa. And then Gail Delahunt. Okay, good.
Thank you, Chairman Young. My name is David Costa, COSTA. There's so many areas of this draft that are problematic for me. In no particular order, the proposed future nitrogen reporting date is October 1st of 2014. which is during the ongoing fertilizer season for crops that we just finished planting 3 or 4 weeks earlier, so it's not even in a natural break in the cropping cycle. I'm really confused on how you can require ponds to be lined to avoid percolation in one paragraph, then promote percolation basins and recharge projects in another paragraph, while in yet another paragraph promoting the benefits of percolating surface water despite exceedances of water quality standards. Last year, I spent $119,000 on a pre-nitrogen application soil-based testing program conducted by a certified crop advisor. But the draft order states that leaf samples must be analyzed before applying more nitrogen. My CCA doesn't support this as an application trigger because it's not telling you what's in the soil available for plant uptake. So on the one hand, you're mandating the use of CCAs, yet on the other, you're mandating a practice contrary to the advice and direction that they've given me and which I've supported with substantial investment. And when Dr. Tim Hart says that commercial vegetable production would be severely disrupted by restricting nitrogen fertilization to the amount of nitrogen removed in the harvested product, someone better be listening. With regards to tiers, for some reason, size is still entering the equation. And there's a scenario where two vegetable growers with similar crops and practices are not only not in the same tier, they're not even in adjacent tiers. With the only difference being the size of the operation, one grower ends up in tier three and the other grower ends up in tier one. Yet the staff report says that staff acknowledges that operations less than 1,000 acres may discharge similar or greater amounts of waste and thus pose similar or greater risk to water quality. The reason I raise that point is to say that there's an additional burden placed on tier three growers is a huge understatement, because the expectations and requirements of tier three are exponential as compared to the other tiers, even tier two. The devil's in the details of tier three, and it was not up on the slide to start this meeting. And believe me, having some of those burdens be required only of a subset of tier three growers, as I read so often in the draft, is of no consolation. The volume of documentation, reporting, monitoring, compliance, milestones, timelines, evaluations, and analysis that are required of tier three, I mean, it leads me to believe that, in my opinion, tier three growers are so being set up to fail, and in doing so, you fail. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Gail Delahunt, followed by Deirdre Desjardins, and then Darlene Din.
Good morning. My name is Sonia Salas, and I am at work with Western Growers. I'm a science and technology manager, and I'm here standing in for my colleague, Gail Delahunt, who is unable to represent Western Growers because of conflicts in the legislature in Sacramento.
Could you just spell your name?
Yes, that's Salas, S-A-L-A-S.
Okay.
First name, Sonia.
And that was your last name?
Salas.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm here simply to put Western Growers on the record in support of the Agricultural Coalition's proposal and encourage the board to also support these as a viable and prudent alternative to meet requirements for water improvement. I'm also here to say that Western Growers is willing to work with the stakeholders to ensure the success of this proposal and to help our members achieve the requirements in this proposal. With that, I only want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to express Western Growers' support of the agricultural proposal.
Thank you for your comments. Deirdre Desjardins, then Darlene Din, and then Joe Dillon.
My name is Deirdre Desjardins, D-E-S space capital J-A-R-D-I-N-S. I'm speaking for the Santa Cruz group of the Sierra Club. We applaud the regional board for maintaining requirements to preserve riparian habitat. Pinto Lake in Santa Cruz County has the highest level of DDT of any lake in the state. Legacy pesticides are carried by sediment runoff. As you heard in previous testimony, riparian corridors are critical for erosion control and filtration, so these regulations are essential to restoring the health of this lake. However, we feel that it is critical to have a prescribed width for riparian corridors, as there was in the original draft regulations, because these corridors are being clear-cut even in very sensitive and protected areas. As an example, I brought these pictures of Bennett Slough, which is part of the designated critical habitat for long-toed salamanders. These before and after satellite photos show that the riparian vegetation around the slough was clear-cut sometime in late 2004 to early 2005, in spite of an 800-acre conservation easement, the Federal Endangered Species Act, and the State Coastal Act. This just shows you the kind of damage that is being done, and this is why we need these regulations in the ag order so it's applied uniformly. Pinto Lake also has one of the highest levels of mycotoxin ever measured in a lake. We believe that research will show that nutrient loads in the watershed are associated not only with deteriorating groundwater, but with massive toxic algal blooms in the lake, which are washing down into Monterey Bay and getting into the shellfish and killing sea otters. This is a sentinel species, and we believe that we should not, the Central Coast Water Board should not wait until there is a massive dead zone in Monterey Bay and we have irreversibly contaminated the aquifers to take these actions. I have here a box of 500 letters that was gathered by community members in support of the original regulations and in support of clean water. The board, there would have been many more letters, but for the January 3rd cutoff date. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
I also wanted to submit these photos. I've got copies and copies of the designated critical habitat.
Excuse me, can you give those to me? And do you have, are those letters you have, are those letters that were submitted in January? That box?
Yes, they were submitted by the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water. They're okay. Collected by EJCW.
They're not new letters, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, are they new letters?
No, they're not new letters. There would have been a lot more, but we had the cutoff date.
Right. Okay.
And if you can just give those.
Okay. Ms. Din?
Thank you. Good morning. Darlene Din. Din is D-I-N. Thank you, Board, for the opportunity to speak before you. In reading the draft orders through the many processes, there were too many points that I felt to even cover that I chose to use my 3 minutes to talk about process and lag time and public involvement. And why this is so important is that there's been a breakdown in the communication between the regulated community, the staff, other technical advisors, conservationists, labor, agricultural advocates, environmental justice. The different groups have unfortunately become paralyzed within this process. And when I look at that, I think that the best way to solve a problem is to find the areas that we intersect or how we can find a way to work towards water quality solutions. So I have worked with other agriculturalists and members of the environmental community, conservation community, NRCS, RCD, public officials, staff, public water agencies, labor, farm worker advocates, to try to sit down and determine what would a solution to water quality be. Because from the point of view that we've looked at in working towards this end solution, the process that has come forward, unfortunately, is broken and does not work.
There is lag time within science, and it's a complex issue. So when you can, one of the most important things that I hope that you think about today is you can write whatever regulatory scheme that needs to be done for you to meet certain standards. But if the science isn't there, if the technical capacity isn't there, if the groups aren't working towards a solution, the regulated community, it will be chaotic. And I have found that these meetings that we have started to move together, that everyone is looking to have a voice. They're trying to find out, how do we make it work? The approach that appears at this time that would work the best for agriculture and the public is the Ag Alternative, which is the coalition approach, to be able to sit down and look at watersheds, sub-watersheds, to be able to work on through commodities, through science, to actually start to look at water quality solutions. It's very hard to prescribe an end game. And as David Costa talked about Tier 3 growers, you're not going to solve it when one grower is heavily regulated just by the fact that he's a successful grower of over 1,000 acres, when maybe a grower of a smaller acreage in the same watershed is not able to work in conjunction with him and her to make it work. I just ask you to really look at the coalition approach and to find a way for us to work towards water quality solutions. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Joe Dillon, followed by William, I think it's Everett? Elliott, William Elliott, and then Joy Fitzhugh.
Good morning. My name is Joe Dillon, D-I-L-L-O-N. I'm the Regional Water Quality Coordinator for National Marine Fisheries Service. We have jurisdiction over ESA-listed salmonids, green sturgeon, and some other critters that are out in the ocean. We've submitted many comment letters on this. I'm sure you got them. There is, I appreciate the staff's response to them. There were some very good responses to some of our comments. One topic that was brought up in Watsonville that I would like to revisit just briefly, Chairman Young, Mr. Jeffries, you asked why only organophosphate pesticides were being explicitly called out in this regulation when there was a long list of various pesticides that had been detected in the water bodies. Well, just because the pesticides have been detected doesn't mean that they're there often enough that they're problematic. But one class of pesticides, the pyrethroids, has been shown to be there often enough that it is problematic. And it should be added into the regulation explicitly. In defining your tiers, an application of chlorpyrifos, diazinon, or the subset of pyrethroids that are on the list should be added in and making your tiering decisions, and that should trickle down to all the other subsequent places in the permit where it looks at diazinon and chlorpyrifos explicitly. The addition of monitoring sediments with using Hyala Azoteca will help get some of the information, will help get with some detections and lead you down that path, but I still advise you to explicitly call out the pyrethroids. We think that you've been more than reasonable in accommodating agricultural interests. Some of the slides that struck me very prominently up in Watsonville were the last few speakers put up comparisons between the February 2010 requirements and the March 2011 requirements. So when you hear that things are still too much and that people aren't being listened to, just take a look at the record and remember that the staff's recommended proposal had a lot more items in it, would have been a lot more strict right outside of the gate, and that you have listened to the interests, you have pared back, you have tried to define what is a reasonable starting point and a reasonable first bite at the apple. We will be back here in 5 years. There will be more monitoring data available, and unfortunately this job has turned me into a pessimist, and I think that the monitoring data is going to show that there are problems, and we'll be having some of these discussions all over again. I empathize with your position. My agency has to make these tough decisions. You're in between a rock and a hard place, but sooner or later you're going to have to take that vote. and I encourage you to get on with it.
Thank you for your
Thank
comment.
You.
Chair, can I ask him a question?
Mr. Jeffries.
Absolutely. In your opinion or your analysis, is there a difference between liquid or granule diazon? Does it make any difference as it travels through the root zone into the...
Yeah, it does.
Do you understand my question?
Yes, and it does make a difference, but it has as much to do with the application rate and the subsequent irrigation and how the parcel is drained as it does with the actual formulation at the upfront. If someone applies a granular form of diazon on, plows it in, and then gives it a heavy irrigation and produces a lot of tailwater, they might run a lot of that off the end into the ditch. If they go through and they're spraying with an air blast sprayer or something, and it's a nice good day and they're getting a good foliar application of the product, they might not get very much runoff at all. So
there is quite a bit of difference between the liquid and the granule.
Potentially, yes.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, William Elliott, followed by Joy Fitzhugh. And then Jody Fridiani.
Good morning, Chairman Young, members of the board. My name is William Elliott. That's E-L-L-I-O-T-T. I'm here today to make essentially three comments on process because I leave to those far more knowledgeable in farming and science than I. Comments concerning weaknesses in this overall proposal. The first comment I wanted to make deals with what I view as being the illegal renewal by executive director order of the 2004 agricultural order. As the board may be aware, a petition was filed by me with the state board this past week in that regard. Certainly, if the renewal of a executive order is not a modification of an executive order, I can't imagine what is. Secondly, I think there's a concern, at least on my part, with the impacts not looked at and the totality of the environment. One of those, I think in my view at least, the staff is in effect placing concerns over water quality above concerns over air quality. For instance, as we pointed out in our submissions, the Air Quality Board has taken great efforts to control the use of diesel-powered engines in the Monterey Bay area and Salinas Valley. Certainly, having to place water purification machines on farms throughout the Salinas Valley is going to greatly increase the amount of air pollution in that, as will, of course, the necessity to operate the machines, to empty them, to service them, and everything else. The only response really to this entire concern that the staff made was, well, we can't really tell the farmers what to do, so it's just speculation if they're going to use this machine. Of course, these machines are the only way in which these standards can be met, so it sort of follows. The third and final comment really is the economic analysis that was done. Port of Cologne requires an economic analysis, which was simply not done by the staff. Now, that's separate and apart from CEQA. So I think that when all of these things are considered, along with the comments being made today and previously by all of the speakers, the best and the only action that should be taken by this board today is to decline to adopt the modifications, to reject the current proposal, and to instruct the staff to start all over again and hopefully this time do it right. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Joy Fitzhugh.
Good morning, Joy Fitzhugh, F-I-T-Z-H-U-G-H. And I'm speaking on behalf of the San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau today. And also as a prior watershed
coordinator. And I've had feedback from a number of the small growers that were in the watersheds that I was working with. And they're very concerned about the Tier 3, because some of them are small, but by virtue of not being able to, well, they're in a tier in a 303D listed stream area and so forth, and they're having to look at meeting the Tier 3 requirements, they say, we're not going to be able to continue. We can't afford. Our margin is small enough that the additional reporting, monitoring, and implementation will take away all costs, all incentive with the costs. So that I'm looking at trying to reassure them that this isn't so, but I haven't found that in the report. And I think, as well as looking at this arbitrary 1,000-acre trigger, you need to look at the small grower who might, through no consequences of his own, be thrown into Tier 3 and have to follow those regs. And I have to follow the prior speaker when he talked about the economic analysis. When I looked through the economic issues that were in this report, and I saw things that were cited from 1990, things that were cited from 99 as part of the cost, and they say, oh, well, this is just to show the expense. No. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, does not show the cost. As we all know, costs have gone up tremendously. And I think that the implementation of this program is going to be a lot more costly than most people think. Lastly, I want to say something about the fact that we have an order that appears to be looking at the program as point source. As we know, point source coming out of a pipe that from a factory or something is very different from the very complicated, complex, uniquely individual non-point sources. And we're trying to pack them into three tiers, which is better than one, I'll agree. But you're trying to pack this into three tiers when everybody is very, very different. And I think we have to go back and start looking at the fact that we aren't all a factory. We're all, somebody said, Mother Earth kind of regulates how things go, and Mother Earth is not one and the same. I do urge you to take a good, serious look at the Ag Coalition alternative. It is looking at what is practical and what can be done by our agricultural community. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Dr. Hunter?
Yes, thank you, Joy. Mm-hmm. Good to see you here today. Just so I'm clear on the small farmer comments that you're bringing to us today and your concern about the 1,000-acre trigger, are you talking...
Well, not the 1,000-acre trigger. I'm more concerned about the fact that through nothing that they have done, because they might be on a 303D listed stream within that area, and small acreage... When you talk about buffers and so forth, you may end up taking their whole production land with a buffer. So that's what these people are worried about.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure I understood.
Yeah,
because the thousand acre people do have
an automatic trigger, which
right.
also, so you're looking at both ends of the spectrum possibly being caught in this Tier 3.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jody Fridiani. Okay. Cliff Garrison.